Welcome to the Everything Coworking Podcast, where you learn what you need to know about how the world wants to work. And now your host, coworking space owner and trend expert, Jamie Russo.
Welcome to the Everything Coworking Podcast, episode number 79. This is Jamie Russo. I own a coworking space in Palo Alto, California. I am the executive director of the Global Workspace Association and the host of this podcast, the Everything Coworking Podcast. Welcome. It's great to share the week with you. With my GWA hat on, I want to remind you that we are only a couple of weeks from the early bird deadline for the 2018 Flex Office Conference. So after August 3rd, prices go up for a final time. So get your tickets now. The conference is essentially a co-working conference. It's hosted by the Global Workspace Association and NAOP, the Association for Developers and Landlords. But we call it the Flex Office Conference because it's integrating these two groups who have a broad range of interest in offering flexibility in workspaces. You can get all the details at www.flexofficeconference.com. But I wanted to mention a couple of really unique aspects to this conference. So one is that we offer amazing content, which you can find on that website, networking, and a couple of other professional development opportunities, which I always think is a great ROI for a conference in addition to everything else you get from attending. So one, we're offering a pre-conference course on management agreements. So this is really good for you if you own a building and are trying to understand how you can offer flexible workspace, but you don't want to do it yourself. You want to work with an operator, or if you're an operator who thinks that they might have an opportunity to do a management agreement or wants to look for an opportunity with a local landlord, but you have no idea how this works, how it's structured, how to create an agreement. We're going to cover all the details in this workshop. So it'll be taught by operators who have done management agreements and developers who have done them as well. So you're getting both perspectives. And then we also have a workshop on sales for co-working space owners and managers. And this will cover techniques on touring, compensation for your community managers or sales team, and much more. And we have also a very unique opportunity for building owners to meet operators and vice versa. So we have a networking lounge where we will be facilitating small group think tank sessions on industry topics, which will give you the chance to meet and build relationships with owners or operators, depending on what hat you wear, in a small group setting, which is, I don't know where else you can do that. So this is super unique to our conference and could be a reason to attend even if you're not interested in the amazing content and networking opportunities. So definitely check out all the things that are happening at the conference at www.flexofficeconference.com. And if you have any questions about whether the conference is a fit for you, again, if you're doing a co-working space, it's a co-working, but broader. We really explore kind of all the trends around flexibility in the industry. Shoot me an email. I'm happy to give you some more details or my perspective on why it might be useful for you to go. You can hit me at my GWA email address for those questions, which is jamie@globalworkspace.org. So I give an intro to my guest today once I get started in the interview, but I wanted to kind of set this up because we don't talk about this in the interview. So today's interview is with Kyle Kulbroth, who is now the CEO of Fueled Collective, which is an amazing new concept, and I won't go into details. It's a franchisable concept for a workspace and a social club, and I certainly wish I had one of those in my town. So, but my relationship with Kyle goes back for years. So I met him as a member of Lexi, the League of Extraordinary Coworking Spaces, and Kyle was a co-founder and CEO of Coco Coworking in Minneapolis, which was their name before they converted to Fueled Collective. And Coco purchased my co-working space in Chicago. So Enerspace had a Chicago location first. It was 10,000 square feet. And the Coco, so I had moved to the Bay Area and was managing it remotely. I had a team that was managing it, but sort of high level managing it remotely. And Coco wanted to expand into the Chicago market. And we had very similar sort of cultures and mindset around what it means to be a co-working space. So it turned out, after I was willing to give up my baby to be a great experience for both parties. So I just wanted to mention that context. So Kyle shares a lot of details about kind of his journey and his new concept. So I hope you really enjoy this episode. I am super excited about my guest today. I have with me Kyle Kohlbroth, co-founder and CEO of Fueled Collective, which is the co-working industry's newest and most unique franchise player. I'll let him describe it a little bit more because it's really not just co-working. Kyle is an industry veteran. He and his co-founder, Don, well, his original co-founder, started Coco back in January 2010 and have expanded that across the Minneapolis area and into Chicago. And I'll let him kind of share where that is today. So Coco has transformed into Fueled Collective, but that was the original brand that they started. Kyle, thank you for joining us today. I'm really looking forward to our conversation.
Thank you for having me. This should be fun.
So I've given you just a very brief intro. So I'm going to let you kind of dive in. Tell us maybe a little bit about your background, which I think plays into, I want to hear your co-working story. What was the moment that you knew you were going to do co-working?
Yeah, great. That was back in 2009. First of all, I'm a serial entrepreneur. So I've lived the life of being on a growth side, dying side of a business, merger, acquisition. Like I've lived that whole life cycle as an entrepreneur. And back in 2009, I had actually been working with a client of mine. I was doing consulting work and it was in legal services business, not the most exciting topic on the planet, but very challenging. And at the time, I kind of decided I had wanted to get back to my creative roots. My creative roots is I'm an architect by education. And so I reached out to my good friend and collaborator of the past, Don Ball, and we just got together. We got together at a little bar in St. Paul, and which all great ideas start at bars, right? So we right, had...
Which might have been a little crystal ball into the future.
Exactly. In hindsight, it seemed perfect. Yeah, so we had got together and we were just talking about kind of the trends. And at the time, if you remember, not that long ago, Twitter was relatively new. Social media was just happening.
I know, this was back in 2009. It's like the early days of everything.
Yeah. I joke with people that I used to be able to yell out my window and reach more people than all you millennials, you'll appreciate that. We just started talking about these trends. Mobile technology was actually enabled where you could work anywhere. Social media was changing the way communication occurred, the way people gathered. And then things like unconferences, open space technology, all these different ways that were enabling more of a democratic voice to gathering and where we were meeting. At the same time, of course, we were minting independence by the thousands. And as a society, right, corporations were laying people walking out the door. And we kind of knew at that moment in time that the world had fundamentally changed. And it wasn't just about, you know, where people would work. That certainly was shifting. But it was about this thing around, where do I belong? So in our culture, we're all identified with our titles and the places we work. And all those kind of things that we have in the United States, suddenly when that disappears, what happens, right? And we know from Maslow that that's the lowest level of the hierarchy, right? But once I belong somewhere and I can call place my own to know and to be known, then I could really start to create amazing things. And we just fundamentally believe that when people did that together, you know, incredible things were possible. So we decided at the time, so this was 2009 moving into 2010, we decided to sign a lease for 18,000 square feet in St. Paul, Minnesota for a co-working space. And it was a big leap of faith. So that's kind of...
Wait, was the Grain Exchange your first location?
That's our second location.
Oh, second. Okay.
Yeah. So we just made that leap of faith. We put it out to Twitter. We had an open house. And in this empty warehouse, basically, vaulted, you know, typical creative loft place, we had 100 people showed up for our first open house. And we were just kind of stunned by that. And that gave us the confidence to keep moving. So that was our first location. That's what got us into it. And we, right after there, about 6 months after there, we got a phone call from R.T. Ryback, the mayor of Minneapolis. So we were on the St. Paul. Remember, we're in the Twin Cities, so St. Paul side of the river. And the mayor from the other major city called us and said, hey, I've been following you. I love what you're doing. I want you in Minneapolis. How can I help? Now, at 6 months old, in 2010, in a co-working business, and nobody even understood what we were doing.
Right.
That was a compliment. Mm-hmm. So we decided we'd check it out after a couple of times saying, no, we're not ready. And at that moment in time, we had 30 members, maybe. I was still writing checks into the business and not taking a salary.
You started with 18,000 and was it all open space?
No, actually, great question. It was 18,000 we started with. Part of it was a small event space.
Okay.
A lot of open space. But then we had the situation. We tried to use what the space presented us. So rather than just go gut it and build something in, we just kind of used what was there. Partly financially, right?
Right.
Adopted, but partly our mindset too, to see where this would go. So we ended up with these kind of like a three-sided room with no door on the front of it. So three walls open to the inside. And that was actually the birth of our concept called campsites. Don and I looked at each other and said, you know, what the hell do we do with these rooms? They're not even rooms, right?
Yep. Let's brand them and make them sound compelling.
Exactly. So we created campsites, which we still have as part of kind of our offering to date. And I think we're one of the few that still do have that kind of semi-private, open, but dedicated space. Anyway, so that was St. Paul. So we got that up and running. Then we did go to Minneapolis. You know, to make the story short, we ended up signing a lease. The mayor was awesome in building awareness. The city did not write us any checks into the business, so we had to figure out how to do it all alone. But as soon as we opened that location, that was in the historic trading floor of the Minneapolis Grain Exchange. So those of you who haven't seen it, it's about a 16,000 square foot space with 42-foot ceilings and Palladian windows. Classic architecture, 1903 built. Once we put modern furniture and a bunch of people on Mac laptops in that space and the pictures started to float around, people got it. We didn't have to say anymore. Like the visual connected the story.
Yeah. I'll link to some pictures from your, you know, like Google Images or whatever. I mean, it's a stunning space, but not sort of for the faint of heart. I mean, I would guess you had some power challenges, lighting challenges. I mean, it's not a typical workspace.
It is not. Interesting enough, the space had sat empty for 2.5 years, basically, because nobody could figure out what to do.
Yeah.
Historical preservation, like everything you could imagine. It had the most number of constraints you could imagine to any design problem.
Yep.
But we came in and really our story to the owners is this space represented their temple. Their heart and soul is tied to it. 100 generations tie back to stories and on this trading floor. And so we were able to connect was the story of we're the next economy building a digital network and economy of businesses through membership, exactly like you did 100 years ago in a physical form. And I think they got it and they trusted us with this history. And, you know, we're forever grateful for that.
Yeah, so it's an amazing space. And you were sort of lucky to get, some support from early leadership in both Minneapolis and St. Paul. And then, so Minneapolis, well, I don't know if it's sort of considered both, but is it like the Fortune 500 capital of the country? Am I getting that right?
Yeah, pretty close. We're 19 Fortune 500s are based here in Minneapolis, St. Paul, which many people don't know. But companies like Target, U.S. Bank, 3M, Best Buy. Yeah.
And many of them took space in your locations.
Yeah. Over time, as we started, I think we all started in freelancers and independents. But quickly, we started to see this and where we're at today is this expansion of small businesses and then this desire by enterprises to be rubbing elbows, to be sitting next to be inspired by this new economy that was forming and the workers that were in it. So very early on, we had, matter of fact, one of our first meetings that we held for non-members was a very large national bank had a strategy session that they had. So we knew we kind of like, there was an opportunity bigger than the conversation was having that we saw it in the industry and just in action by the companies that were showing up in our spaces.
So then, I mean, growth continued after that. So before it transitioned to Fueled Collective, which we'll talk about in a minute, Coco, how many locations, square feet?
Yep. So we scaled it up to 5 locations. So 4 in Minneapolis, St. Paul, and then 1 in Chicago. And we're about 125,000 square feet. And it is, again, our offering includes both the open collaborative spaces. We've always, for a long time, we've had suites and private offices and then this campsite layer. We do quite a bit, as we talked earlier about, with enterprise and meetings and then events. One of our largest partners that came when we moved to our downtown location was Google. Shortly after us getting opening, matter of fact, 6 months after moving in, we got a call from Eric Schmidt's office who came and visited us. And that was the beginning of what's known today as Google for Entrepreneurs. And we're one of their first partners.
And you do a lot with supporting that program. And I know I get to have coffee or lunch with you sometimes when you visit the Bay Area, but it's a pretty active program for your group.
It's very active for us as a community. And then the community of communities, we belong to one of 11 locations in North America that are tech hubs for Google, which is their sister pairing to their campus initiative internationally.
Yep.
So collectively, we do a lot for entrepreneurship and the startup community, both here and kind of globally.
Yep. And a neat connection, I would guess, to the community of other tech hubs, sort of a unique experience as a co-working space operator. That's, kind of a small number of folks that get to participate in that. That's really neat.
Yeah.
So, absolutely. I mean, maybe before we jump into Fueled Collective, just because you have been doing this for so long and have scaled, your team has grown, kind of what has it been like to, what are sort of the big things you've had to sort of manage through to grow and then, you know, pre-shifting over to Fueled Collective, which is a whole different level of scaling?
Yeah, great. We've had to tackle a lot of issues. We were one of the earlier multi-location, member of one, member of all kind of a format, which poses just a wide set of challenges, right? And back, you know, when we started, there's no software. Yeah, today.
I know. I always think about how, right, you've done a lot of building your own. And but I was saying to somebody the other day, I was like, look, right, any of the software has been around for like 3 years. For you know, just not very long. And I forget that it just, right, when you started, there wasn't, you know, the platforms just weren't there, or maybe some of them were and they were super, super basic. So you're kind of, in the creation mode.
Yeah, we had to figure it out. And so that was exhilarating and scary, you know. We spent a lot of time and resource on that. It's not cheap to build your own application. But relative to the other things you would have to do to get through it, you know, just the sheer brute force. So we always wanted to work a little bit smarter and kind of figure out ways. You know, being an entrepreneur, I'm also a kind of a process and technology guy. And as an architect, like all those pieces fit together. So we just kind of plotted through it. We took it in 2 week design sprints and just worked on each key problem one at a time. Did not try to, you know, bake out the perfect solution from the get-go, just solve our most urgent need one at a time. So we did that for about 4 years of 2 week sprints, if you can imagine.
Wow. But I love that process because that's how, right, that's how you build, just consistently going after it. I was mentioning right before we started, because Kyle likes to talk about sort of systematizing, and it sounds like that's right, kind of a fit for your background and personality, but it's so key when you're scaling to put systems in place and methodologies for training new hires, because now you've got this big team and you've got a certain amount of turnover and, you know, trying to, and for a company like yours, it's very focused on culture and a specific member experience. All of that is really critical as you're growing. And so just being really consistent with the systematizing of your business can be just so important to manage through that.
Absolutely. I can't stress that enough. Yeah. I mean, I think you're right on, Jamie. I think that, I can't remember who said this, but you build your systems for the company you're becoming, not the company that you are. So you always have to be thinking beyond that. And I think that natural kind of energy kind of that you're shifting and you're working ahead also brings you ahead, right? It pulls you
along. Yeah.
Yeah. You start to think, well, what if we could do this? Well, then that enables you to do it. But at the end of the day, it really was about enabling. We're so set on and so focused on being human centered with everything we do. Technology is not in our members' faces. Instead, it enables us to be more with our members. And that's, so we've always designed things to take the process, you know, take the zeros away, as I think the founder of Skype said, you know, I remove the zeros, take those costs away, make things run better in the background so you can spend your time and focus your energy on what matters, and that's members in our business.
Yeah, I mean, you created just an amazing sort of brand and culture at Coco, and then you made this big shift into a new project called Fueled Collective, and I've been lucky enough to get a FaceTime tour of the location in Columbus, Cincinnati.
Cincinnati, you got it.
Cincinnati, I got it right the first time. So tell us about that shift, the vision, you know, what you're creating, sort of, you know, who's on the team, kind of tell us what that looks like. I think it's really unique and I'm excited for folks to learn about it.
Oh, thank you. Thank you. Well, first of all, let me start with what we've created. Fueled Collective is a social club and shared working space model. And what's unique about it is over the years of being in the business of building a collaborative community, we notice that there's a day part to all of our routine and then there's a evening part, right? But as co-working became more and more accessible to more people, and I think that this lifestyle as a business has evolved, it's exactly that. People are choosing for themselves a lifestyle where those two things are almost indistinguishable, right? People have asked us, are you social first? Are you work first, right? Which direction are mm-hmm. you? I'm not sure I can answer that because I'm not sure I can distinguish it any longer. You know, walk into, choose your favorite cool restaurant in your neighborhood, and what do you see? You see people having cocktails, eating, and working on their laptops, presenting their ideas. But what we also noticed within that is that people just, it's not easy. I've got a great, this very cool, hip, professional place to do my work. But then when I go out to my night part, which is largely work too, well, I'm in a bar, I'm in a, trying to wedge into a coffee shop or at a restaurant, and there is a breakdown. And so we just believe that these two things happen all at once. That's life. That's not even a lifestyle. It's just the way it is now. So we had to create a platform for that. How this came to being was we got a call one day from a gentleman from a group called St. Gregory, which is a franchise development sales and operation business. So they look for trends in the industry, and then they decide on finding a partner or doing it themselves and creating a brand to take to a franchise. So I got a call from the CEO of this company and said, hey, we've been looking at this. We're interested. We're going to do this. We'd love to talk with you. And one thing led to another, and a third party joined us, and that is a group out of New York by name of Fueled, which is a digital development and brand agency, probably one of the best, I think, in the country. And so a third partner joined me by name of Ramit Chawla. So Ramit, Jeff Hare, myself became kind of the founders and the board and the creators of Fueled Collective. While we were building the business model, we had to decide what the name was. At the time, we didn't have a name. And ultimately, at the end of the day, we decided to go with Fueled Collective, which was Ramit's co-working space in Soho in New York City. And it's a great name. You know, we loved Coco. It had this, like, it just was part of our soul. So it was very hard to let go. But we had noticed that the brand Coco had kind of eroded over time. Disney had a movie. It didn't work internationally. There were all sorts of complications. So, I mean, I think as our business has matured, we've had to accept a few of these things. And one of them was to rename our baby and become Fueled Collective. And so while we were building the business and working on getting it to launch, St. Gregory had a portfolio of many businesses. One and a group of those portfolios were acquired by TPG, one of the largest private equity companies in the nation. And while they were doing that transaction, they looked around and saw what else they were doing and kind of liked what we were doing at Fueled Collective. So TPG became our fourth partner in the business. And we're at a place right now where we've published our disclosures. We're bringing everything to market right now and super excited about what we're seeing.
So describe the space and the amenities and sort of what it's like to, what do you have access to when you're a member there?
Yeah. So we described a little bit of the theme is if you were to walk into modern day British social club, right? So it does feel a little bit like you're stepping back and forward in time at the same time. So there's kind of a timeless wow to the spaces. And that really resonated with us having like the Minneapolis Grain Exchange is kind of that same feeling. So spaces are full amenity. They're beautiful. We have everything from suites, private offices, meeting rooms, just like you would expect in the co-working space. But then each area is kind of compartmentalized so we can move into the evening seamlessly without interrupting the workday. And so that includes things like a movie room. There's actually two full bars, multiple kitchens. We have the ability to support everything from a large group, event group, up to like 500 people, because we do a lot of private kinds of events too. We had an event the other night that was 150 people for a private dining event, which is just magnificent. So they're beautiful spaces, very well amenity, meaning that the finish looks nice, but yet you'd feel comfortable there. I think one of the things we looked at is brands like Nui House and even Soho House, right? Mm-hmm. Which, by the way, we had engaged Vicky Charles, who was the designer for Soho House, to help us design. But we looked at those spaces and we kind of felt like they were inaccessible to the majority. And we wanted to make this more available, a little bit more inclusive in the way we approached it. So.
Yeah, I feel like those brands are very urban focused and a little, right, exclusive feeling. And so, right, the Cincinnati, yeah. So, and you also have a studio.
Yes.
Can't forget that.
Yes, absolutely. So health and wellness.
By heart, right. Yeah. Right? Which kind of to me sort of fits into the fueled, you know, like sort of, you know, body energy, love that. And that's open to the public. Is that right?
It's open to the public. So that part of the model is a shared economy model also. So yoga instructors, Pilates instructors, they all, you know, it's hard to find a place to call your own. So we have a studio that basically converts into theirs while they use it. They rent it like a membership kind of basis. But then we also have it and it converts and it's attached directly to the space. So our members can go there and take classes during the daytime, but then it also opens and enjoins with the rest of the space for some really remarkable kinds of event and hospitality settings.
I can imagine. I can imagine, especially the first one location in Cincinnati, such a unique space for, I mean, we talked about so what is a sort of average member? I mean, so you have members that are part of the workspace. Can you also just have a social membership?
Yeah, that's one of the big distinctions is, you know, you could have a working membership. And if you have a certain level of working membership, you automatically get the social. But what we heard over and over and over again in the past 8-9 years is that I love this. I want to be part of this community, but I've got an office and I've got a working space. I don't need that. I kind of want to come here at different hours and times. So you can have a social membership and you can join and show up, you know, 7 nights a week if you want. Come in at 5 o'clock and then stay till the end of the evening. And that is, you know, what's been fascinating is we're kind of in a place in between time where the old things like country clubs and even old social clubs or old, you know, we have a Minneapolis club and it's where, you know, quite honestly, all the old white men hang.
Right. Totally. I know. I feel like we have some friends who have started joining like country clubs, which feels like something, you know, your dad would do. But I think it's because of what you talked about earlier. They just crave like community and they have and a place to do that in. Because we all have, you know, kids in school and you've got, you know, friends that are parents of your kids' friends and sporting, you know, you see people, but where do you go on the weekend that's not in your house maybe because you don't want to entertain all the time and be with people and sort of the cheers feeling and the right. And I can pop open my laptop or I can get a workout. It's just like, there's not really a source to fulfill that except the more traditional options that a lot of us just don't feel like we connect with. So
right.
Yeah, this is like the modern equivalent, the modern solution to that need.
It is. It's touching on the need. And let me be clear, it is not a country club, right?
Right.
But it fulfills upon that need. And I think, you know, Howard Schultz from Starbucks said this well, is that we hunger, in our culture today, we are hunger for human connection. And I think as more and more technology has come online, we've polarized our culture, and we're just dying to get together and to be human in just a very natural way. So, I mean, I believe that's what we're creating, is that place for entrepreneurs and startups, but small businesses and even, you know, everything from attorneys to doctors. I mean, it was we had this private dining session and I sat at a table with 5 women, all I would call them like the power players in Cincinnati, right? A doctor, a lawyer, a school board member. And I'll never forget, they said, we have to belong here because there's nowhere else we can go to belong like this, where we can actually sit down, professionally socialize, and hang out with each other to lift each other up. Can't do it at a bar. They can't do it at a coffee shop. And dinner is just about eating. So that kind of hit me hard, that what we're building here has a universal appeal.
What a great testimonial. I mean, right. You must just love to see that. But that's what I think too, the difference, like you can go to a bar, you can go to a coffee shop, but the space you're creating is a space where people have opted in and have said, I want to create connections. Because you go to a coffee shop and a bar, you're not, you know, maybe not. Maybe people there just want to do their own thing and they're with their own people. But if you have your laptop open and you just feel like chatting with someone at the bar, like, look, they're a member too. And they've said, you know, they're signaling, this is what I want too, which is really neat. And in communities like Cincinnati that are smaller, it's like it can be a real place of connection.
Yeah.
I know you'll be everywhere. You'll probably be in Chicago and New York and
So yes, it all goes right. Yes.
Right. So what do you think a franchisee looks like? I mean, I know there's probably a little range, but tell us like who will create these across the country.
Yeah. You know, largely we don't yet know, but we would suspect, I think it's a couple areas. I think it's, we could see property owners, land, you know, the landlords themselves being interested in this. We could see portfolio holders, whether they're REITs or just, again, you know, portfolio building owners. It's probably not, although I wouldn't completely exclude, it's probably not like a Subway franchise owner. There's a little bit different investment. And I think it's somebody who's looking to improve an area, a property. And yeah, so I think it could take a lot of different forms. It'll be fascinating to see. But my suspicion is it's going to be some property holders.
And the floor plate, because it sounds like a lot is happening in the space, but the floor plate is, will be on average, or do you have kind of a, I'm trying to remember. I'm sure I've asked you this before, but.
That's okay. Cincinnati is 26,000 square feet. I'm guessing on average, these will be, you know, 15 to 30,000 square feet on average, some larger, but probably no smaller than 15,000.
Right. Because you're right. Trying to kind of fit a lot in there. I just love the concept for somebody who wants to create, it's a lot to create on your own, but for an individual operator to go design something that accomplishes what you're creating is hard and takes, right, like the unique team that you've pulled together to do this, you're sort of creating a plug and play option for someone who wants to create this, but you know, it's hard to replicate.
Absolutely. It is. And it takes, you know, franchises can be complicated businesses, and we built an incredible team. If you look at who and the types of people that have gathered together, Fueled's the best in class in digital and design. Surely, you know, Vicky, best in design, interior team down at St. Gregory, sales, operations, and just helping people move through the process. I mean, you've done site selection, Jamie, right? I mean, that, just take that one portion. Right. Yep. How complicated and exhausting that can be. And to have someone alongside you to say, nope, there's a plan here. You know, here's how we go through that, and to guide and direct. And then to have a solution to know that this thing works.
And all the other components that go along with it. I mean, we talk a lot on the podcast and with my GWA hat on, like helping people figure out how to run a business. And one of the advantages of being in a franchise environment is those components are kind of, I mean, there's work you have to do at the local level, but you try to help solve for many of those and create the systems. I mean, you've done the scaling and the systematizing. And so you're sort of helping someone drop into that and sort of enjoy the thing that they like doing the most versus having to focus on creating everything from scratch.
Absolutely. What I love about it, we have done that and we built the technology, you know, we built the new technology again. Yes. Of course. But I think you also, much like our members who show up in our spaces, you don't have to go it alone in our model.
Right.
Right. You get to change the world and belong to something bigger. And that includes a bigger network. So it's a really cool opportunity for people. I would be remiss if I could add one more thing. We are, for those who say, you know, I love it, I want this solution, but I have no idea how to run it.
I wanted to bring this up and I thought, am I allowed to mention this? Because I think this is an incredible part of the whole package.
Yeah, yeah. We're pretty excited about it. So similar to what you might expect with a hotel, you know, franchise model. If you were to buy one and say, I want to have it, but I don't know how to run it, you can hire and engage the hoteler. We're going to offer the same thing. So there'll be a few collective FC management that will be a business and kind of portfolio management solution for those individuals or those larger entities who just want to be part of it, but don't want to run it, and we'll run it for them.
Yeah, I love it. Right. Making it even better. If you want to create this, you don't even have to run it yourself. You can integrate it. And to your point, right, a lot of could be just a real solution for folks that have the space and want to activate it in this way and are passionate about that. So I love that part and, you know, proven operations. So if somebody wants to learn more about the concept and sort of, you know, be a part of the journey as this kind of launches more fully, where can they go?
Yeah. Well, first of all, next week I'm going to be in Las Vegas. So anybody going to Recon, feel free to reach out to me online. I'm easily findable on LinkedIn. And
is this a franchising conference?
No, it's one of the largest real estate.
Oh, okay. Got it. Okay.
So any brokers online or any friends of brokers or any property owners listening to this, I would love to meet with you down there. So we'll be there. Also, if you just go to fueledcollective.com is the franchise component website. If you go to, you can also visit fueledcollectivemn.com to visit our local locations to see a little bit of both of that. Yeah.
And I have to put in my own plug, which is that Kyle and part of his team will be speaking at the Global Workspace Association conference in September, and they're going to share their perspective on how hospitality is integrating into work and life and kind of what that looks like and share some of their experiences and perspectives. So we're really excited to see Kyle there. So if you're interested in meeting Kyle, he will be at the conference, and that is September 12th through the 14th in Austin. And I will certainly put a link to that in the show notes as well. Kyle, anything else before we do a final wrap up here?
No, I'm just thankful for the time we got to spend together again, Jamie. Looking forward to GWA. If you're listening to this podcast and you're not a GWA member, you can join.
Kyle, you're going to be my favorite guest of the year.
I'll take it. No, I would just close by encouraging anyone who's in this industry or thinking about this industry, don't give up hope. There's a lot of challenges. There's a lot of things that we're all facing. The market is shifting. I'm a firm believer that we are just on the base of the curve to mass market. It's only begun.
Oh, totally. Yep. Yeah. So somebody asked me, you know, what inning are we if this was baseball? And I was like, I don't know, like bottom of the second, like early, right? Yeah.
Very early.
Yeah.
Very early. Keep the faith. We're changing the world in a good way, in a way that it needs to. And, you know, let's bring people together through the work we're doing.
Yeah. Wonderful. Thank you for all the work that you've done. And thank you for sharing, you know, what you're up to today. We really appreciate it and look forward to watching this unfold.
Thank you, Jamie.
Thanks for joining us on this episode of Everything Coworking. Be sure to click the subscribe button so you can stay up to date on the latest trends and how-tos. Until next time.